Thank you very much, Guruji. Our president, Orat Uchikawa of Global Clergy, Pandit Premierji, all religious leaders, friends. I'd like to thank all of you for being here. I also am a member of the Global Clergy Association, and I'm very happy to be able to speak to you today on the theme of what is being held in Melbourne, as you have heard and you've seen the presentation. I think as religious people or as human beings, we must think of the spirit. The spirit is there, was there or is there before religion. Religion was created by humanity. And the very word religion means to reunite, from Latin re ligare. Reunite ourselves with the divinity or our source. If we don't do that, then we're not truly being human beings, and we're not living in the spirit. And if we ignore the spirituality that we are, then we will be sort of floating around on the periphery of what is called spiritual life. We will not get to know God. We will not know our reality. We will not know one another in the true sense. And there's much you have already heard this morning about integrating, understanding one another, sharing in spirit through religion. I'd like to have a few quotations before I get into the real subject matter. There's a Jewish person, a writer in Germany, and this is what he said. The world is perfect, but it is afflicted by a disease called man. In peacetime, sons bury their fathers. In war, fathers bury their sons. A former Governor General of Canada, Romeo LeBlanc, maybe some of you remember, when we talk to people like ourselves, all we are getting back are echoes. When we talk to people who are different, we are made to think. When we think, we learn. And when we learn, we grow. I'm sure all of us here would like to grow. I don't mean this way. I mean inwardly. Our Master Kabir Sahib said, if you turn your eyes from the external to the internal, Naina jo ulate kabira, science and mukhkare. God is right there, just for you to open your inner eyes and to realize God. I think this Parliament of World Religions started in 1893, as you have seen, and they have outlined a global ethic. And part of that global ethic is that every human being must be treated humanely. We are human beings. Let us treat one another humanely. There are four commitments to that ethic. A commitment to a culture of non-violence and respect for life. Commitment to a culture of solidarity and a just economic order. Commitment to a culture of tolerance and a life of truthfulness. Commitment to a culture of equal rights and partnership between men and women. I think, let us imagine there's a little country that nobody has heard about. And from that country, population only 750,000, landlocked between the huge countries of India and China, that country is Bhutan. I don't know how many of you have heard of Bhutan. Its former king, King Jigme Wangchuck, in 1972, coined the term gross national happiness. We don't think of gross national happiness. We think about gross domestic product. I think we need to think about gross national happiness. Because that is what religion is about. To bring peace, contentment and happiness in our lives. And the principle on which that is based the gross national happiness is that economic and material development must occur side by side with spiritual development. Without the two, you cannot have a gross national happiness. And there are four pillars to this gross national happiness: the promotion of a sustainable development, preservation and promotion of cultural values, conservation of the natural environment, and the establishment of good governance. You have heard some government leaders already speak. I think in order to get a good picture of what this global goodness is, the good of all, we have to look at various things in our life that we partake in, at others, and we all partake in. And I will outline some of these and see if you can identify yourself as being part of it or perhaps not. The first one I'm thinking about is material and economic well-being. Now, we all know we need economic well-being. You know what is happening in the world today because of corporate greed, and the economy is shattered, and I think we are all paying the price for that. And perhaps it may take a few years for us to get back into economic well-being. The next one I would talk about is social and cultural well-being. And because the time is limited, I will not go into great depth. I will only point out the significant things that we need to think about. Every society, no matter how they practice their culture, how they practice their religion, what food they eat, and the type of clothes they wear, or the art that they express, every culture make up this one world. And everyone has an equal place in this world. And I think we have to respect that. Let us come to religious and spiritual well-being. This whole conference here today is based on religion, religious values, and how religion can bring the greatest good for the greatest number of people, the well-being of all people. Religion has a basis, a supreme figure, an enlightened teacher, somewhere at the head of this religion. And what is religion? One writer said, religion is only the lengthened shadow of one man. Jesus came into the world, we have Christianity. Lord Buddha came into the world, we have Buddhism. The Prophet Muhammad, we have Islam. All the teachers of humanity have laid down a pathway for us to follow. And that pathway is aiming at the greatest good and well-being of all the people, recognizing that we are all the spirit. We cannot care for the body indefinitely. The body will leave us. But there's something in us that is eternal, because there's consciousness and there's spirit. And spirit can never die. If spirit dies, then there will be no existence, no universe. In terms of religion, many of you may know Harold Rosen. He's a local Baha'i spiritual educator. He summarized four categories of feelings that each one of us can have towards another religion. And the first one of that is called exclusivity. My religion is the only true religion. And there are many people in the world right now who believe that their religion is the only true religion. What is religion anyway when the spirit is the same in all beings everywhere? How can there be exclusivity? The second point he made was inclusivity. My religion contains the truths of all the others. There's plurality. Each religion has its own respectable truths and values. And then there's a progressive unity. All religions have one source and will progressively converge. Now, you can perhaps choose which one of these you would like: exclusivity, inclusivity, plurality, or progressive unity. And the theme today is to have a progressive unity. And if we have progressive unity among all religions, then exclusivity has no place. Inclusivity has no place. You can see this as common sense. We are all brothers and sisters. We say this. God is our Father. God is Mother. God is Spirit. We are all children. If we are all children of the same Father, are we not related? So why do we divide ourselves? Let us think about our political well-being. You've heard politicians just speak earlier. Why is politics there anyway? Politics is a science of government. What is the duty of the government? It's to look after the people in the, let's say, kingdom or the country. If politicians are self-serving, and many people have lost faith in politicians, I think all of you have felt this sentiment, there must be a reason. As Ujjal Dosan just pointed out, politics must come together with religion. And nowadays it is fashionable to say politics and religion cannot mix. But when you as an individual, a politician as an individual, a spiritual being that perhaps goes to church and prays, then he is also in the government. How does he divide himself between his politics and his religion? I think there is a meeting point in every individual, and that meeting point is the spirit, in spite of the occupation or profession. Let us think about family well-being. There are many families that are suffering because family violence, breakup of families. Families need cohesion. They need mutual respect and mutual love. They must have shared goals, and only then can family progress in the way to bring harmony in the family. When there's harmony and love in the family, it is very easy to extend that outward into somebody else or in the greater society. Educational well-being. We all need education. Education leads to liberation. Ignorance leads to bondage. One of the great philosophers of Greek, Aristotle, said there is no nobler occupation than the pursuit of knowledge for its own sake. No nobler occupation. Can you not imagine how you would feel when you have knowledge compared to when you don't have knowledge? Knowledge is power. Let us strive to have knowledge in all aspects of our life. We're not occupational personalities. I happen to be a physician, but I'm not only a physician, I'm a person. I have children, I'm married, I have social obligations, I belong to a religion. We must learn to adapt ourselves by increasing our education in all spheres of activity. And do not wear blindfolds. Learn about other cultures, about other religions. Later on I will recite something that will be appropriate. This December, environmental well-being, there's the Gaia theory. Gaia, the goddess of the earth. Earth is mother. Do you know each one of us sitting here has the earth in us? We know we have the seawater, we have saline in our system. We have iron, calcium, magnesium, zinc, sulfur, etc. They're all in the earth. As we're growing, we take this from the earth and we grow. We have to respect the earth. Earth is our mother. That is why there's so much environmental movement right now all over the place to try to save this planet Earth. In Copenhagen, Denmark, in December, there's a big summit to deal with the climate change. And all of you know how much this is a great problem in the world right now. There's melting of the polar ice caps. There's a research done in Bangladesh, reported only a few days ago in BBC. that the ocean is rising at 5 millimeters every year. What will it be like 100 years from now, 200, 300 years? These are things we have to keep in mind, and we have to protect the earth. The Food and Agriculture Organization of United Nations said that since 1950, 2 million square kilometers of rainforest and its associated biodiversity has been lost, with livestock ranching being the major culprit. 30% of the UK's methane emissions, a greenhouse gas 21 times more potent than carbon dioxide, is from livestock farming. 67% of the UK's nitrous oxide, 310 times more potent than carbon dioxide, most of it comes from livestock farming. Robbins of Baskin Robbins in Diet for Small America said, and this has been quoted before by the U.S. Agriculture Department, it takes 3.5 acres of land to support one meat-eating person for a year. It takes 0.5 acres of land to support a vegetarian person for 1 year. To produce 1 pound of wheat, it takes 25 gallons of water. To produce 1 pound of beef, it takes 5,000 gallons of water. To produce 1 calorie of food value from protein, it takes 78 calories of fossil fuels. To produce 1 calorie from soybeans, it takes only 2 calories of fossil fuels. These figures I've thrown out just to give you an idea what is happening with the world today because of the type of lifestyle we have is impacting on the environment. We need to control population as the next topic. The Earth is only 25,000 miles in circumference and 7,000 miles in diameter. How many people it can support indefinitely? I will read out some figures. In 1950, world population was only 2.5 billion. 1975, 4 billion. 2000, 6 billion. 2009, 6.8 billion, which is currently now, and projected about 2040 to be 9 billion. I read a long time ago, the most people that can be supported on Earth will eventually be 15 billion. By then, there may not be any resources for people to use. The world will be overcrowded. But this is how life is, and we have to start doing something about it. So let us control population, but not by abortion that's happening in so many countries of the world. God is giving life. We can choose not to produce more children, but it is not right to have freedom of choice after you've made a bad choice. Freedom of choice must be at the beginning. So don't make a bad choice and then say you want freedom of choice. Lifestyle changes. The world is facing an increasing environmental crisis, global warming, air, soil, and water pollution, melting of the polar ice cap, rising sea levels. A lot of the cities and the coastal areas will eventually be submerged because it's going that way. There's negative health effects. There's chronic respiratory diseases from pollution. There's loss of habitat and wildlife, loss of topsoil, land degradation, desertification, and adverse weather conditions and other unforeseen calamities. Just a simple figure. The world population is getting fatter. Obesity is becoming an epidemic. Just to have an idea of consumption by overweight people, obesity uses 18% more of the world's resources. It's something to keep in mind. And obesity leads to greater heart disease, diabetes, cancer, arthritis, high blood pressure, etc. We need a wholesome, balanced diet that's nutritious. We need exercise. Of course, sunshine is free. we have to pay attention to our lifestyle. Now, let me talk about the religions now. And this will only be very brief, just to point out the highlights. In Hinduism, it says, Vasudeva Kutumbakam. The whole world is one family. One of the main tenets is ahimsa, non-violence towards any living thing. It believes in the law of karma. Whatever you sow, that is what you will reap. Sikhism, Buddhism believe the same thing. Christianity also believes it in a way that whatever you sow, that is what you will reap. That's law of karma. Buddhism teaches compassion. And we have our Buddhist. Yes, left. There are three refuges in Buddhism. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha, the congregation. Taking refuge in the Buddha, you take part in compassion. In Dharma, righteousness. Sangha, company of the noble. Christianity, Jesus said to love one another, even as I have loved you. It doesn't teach anything different than what we're supposed to be living. To forgive one another. Forgive those that trespass against us. This teaching of Christianity. Islam. Allah is the merciful. And if you follow the teachings given by the Prophet Muhammad, it teaches mercy and forgiveness, not what is going on in the world today. Judaism. Yahweh, the Supreme God. Moses gave the Ten Commandments for the Jewish people. And those Ten Commandments are meant to ennoble our life and to worship God. Sikhism, Ekankar. God is one. And you serve God by doing seva, simran, satsang. Service to humanity, congregation, devotion, Zoroastrianism, the path of Asha, good thoughts, good words, good deeds. We have heard that from our friend here, Home Italia. The Baha'i community, teaching oneness of all. What greater good can there be in a spiritual congregation than to have the goodness of all at heart? Taoism. Tao is the way. Tao that is indefinable and nameless. That which is universal. It teaches compassion, moderation, and humility. Kabir, of whom I'm a follower, taught that God is one. We are all manifestations of God as spirit. We are in God and God is in us. See God within. And to have love, universal love. I would just like to quote something from this book in which my paper is written. It's called the World Religions After September 11. Just a couple of extracts. We want to improve the world. Teach all children the noble qualities of love, compassion, respect, understanding, nonviolence, and brotherhood. Teach them to think about their own thinking, what thought processes they have and what will happen if they put them into action. Teach all children the reverence for life. Teach them to get rid of the ego. What is egoism that's driving so many of us in the world today, even religious people? What can ego do? Teach all children acceptance of one another with understanding, empathy, sharing, love, respect. And I have proposed in this paper that this has to be started in primary school, teaching all the children the real values of life. Role of religions after 9/11. All religions have an equal right to exist in freedom and dignity without pressure or censure in any form from any other religion. No religion should consider itself superior or that it has a monopoly on God or spirituality. God is spirit and dwells in the hearts of all beings because of God's omnipresence. Truth is God and God is truth is absolute. Truth is God as that is immanent, manifesting in all creation right now. All religions need to tackle violence from the ground up, from the growing little children,
into adult life. Nonviolence must be stressed at the individual level and societal level. Leaders of all religions need to commit themselves to peace and the well-being of all, and every religion should monitor its adherence for violence. If a violent group develops within any religion, then the majority of the adherents must see that that violence is stopped. Now, from what I have said earlier, every religion has a need to exist, and they're all equally important. Therefore, we need to stop this looking at one religion as higher than the other. I will just quote one bhajan that we sing in our session. This is the end of my talk. Let me resolve to become truly human. If I become truly human, it will be pleasing to God. Whether I am a Buddhist, a Jain, a Muslim, a Hindu, or a Christian, we should embrace one another as brothers. We are like the different stars shining in the same sky. How beautiful they look as they keep on twinkling. We're all like different flowers in the same garden. How beautiful they look by just blooming. We're all like lights in the same temple. How beautiful they look being decorated and giving their light. The Gita, the Puran, the Vedas, the Guru Granth, the Bible, the Quran, they're all scriptures of humanity which we ought to read with love. I'd like to thank all of you for listening.